Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
I'm Sheila Shoiga, and welcome to Ready to Be Real Conversations, the podcast series where I chat to people of all walks of life. Some names you'll recognise, others you might not, but my hope is that these conversations will at times inspire, challenge, educate, comfort, or simply entertain you. As this episode is being released on St. Patrick's Day, I thought it would be great to talk to historian and artist Shelley Mooney once again.
The whole idea that, you know, we have Patrick who represents Christianity and, you know, that part of our history, but that he's married in a folkloric sense to this goddess, Sheila.
Who embodies paganism.
Who embodies, yeah, our pre-Christian path. Mm. And I maybe that's not an incorrect comparison to draw, but in my mind, I feel that that's so
opposite
powerful.
Attract.
It's so powerful, you know, and it's this marriage of our past and present.
Shelley lives in County Wexford with her husband, Kev, their baby, Ferdia, and Lola, their dog. And she runs the brilliant Instagram page, Tales from the Wood, which explores the history and mythology of Ireland. And in this conversation, she talks to us about St. Patrick and the man he was before the title of saint was bestowed upon him. But even more interesting than that, she talks to us about Sheila, her connection to Patrick, and the often misunderstood symbol of Sheila in the gig. So we spoke at the end of January all about Bridget, yeah, and the coming of spring with the Celtic Festival of Imbolc. Mm-hmm. And we thought you'd be back a few months later talking about Beltane, which you will be. Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, the podcast comes out on a Friday. This is, of course, St. Patrick's Day.
Sure, it was perfect. Perfect for Sheila.
So let's get into him because, you know, the brand St. Patrick is known not just in Ireland, but globally. Mm-hmm. And it is the most Irish of days. And we've all kind of learned about Patrick through school, and there is an awareness of him and the whole snakes out of Ireland thing, mm-hmm, right? But there are, I'm sure, there's so much more that we don't know, and you were the very person to fill in the gaps. So let's talk about him. Who was he?
So the man himself, shrouded in mystery, as all these things are, you know, but I actually took classes on him specifically in UCD back when I was studying years ago. And I really wanted to know a little bit more because he's just this incredible enigma. And I have to say, from doing the classes, it's turned into a lifelong kind of obsession and love for the legends and for the mystery around him. But it's an amazing story. So I suppose you could say that there are almost two Patricks. Mm. So there's the historical Patrick that actually not many people know about. And then there is this legendary Patrick who has almost become as big a part of our mythology here in Ireland as any of the others, you know, as any of the Two-Headed Danann or Brigid or any of them. Patrick's myths and his legends are completely, like, you know, bound into our folklore and our traditions here. And the legendary Patrick is what we kind of all think of on Patrick's Day. So we have the shamrocks and the snakes and the bishop with the crozier and casting out the pagans and all that. But the man himself is, I think, just so much more interesting. So he was an historical figure who actually walked this island in the 5th century. So a lot of people will be familiar with maybe the start of the story. So he was around 16 years old. He was living in Britain, possibly Wales. And he was abducted by Irish pirates. And he was captured and enslaved and sold into slavery in Ireland, where he ended up on a mountainside tending sheep.
Yeah, this is all what we learned.
That's what we learned. Yeah, that's absolutely what we learned. And that's what he himself testifies to in his own writing. So Patrick left behind two pieces of writing. The first one is called the Confessio. And basically what that is, it's kind of a semi-autobiographical account of his own life. It's a little bit maybe short. We'd love if he'd given us a little bit more detail, but it's brilliant. And then the second one is another letter called A Letter to the Soldiers of Caroticus. And basically in that, he's pleading with an Irish warlord to free some slaves that he'd converted and all the rest. So, but the really interesting one is the Confessio.
Okay.
So I'm going to read you the first line of the Confessio just to kind of get a sense of the type of man that you're talking about. So he says, "My name is Patrick. I am a sinner, a simple country person, and the least of all believers. I am looked down upon by many. My father was Calpurnius. He was a deacon. His father was Potitus, a priest who lived at Banavim Tabernae. His home was near there, and that is where I was taken prisoner. I was about 16 at the time." And that's the first line.
It's punchy, isn't it?
It's punchy. And I think what you can see from that immediately is that this is not a man who was walking the length and breadth of the island wearing a bishop's hat and a crozier and, you know, striking down his foes. This is a very humble, sincere kind of person who I think he doesn't take himself that seriously. He you know, again and again throughout his own writing, it seems to be self-conscious about his lack of education.
Okay.
And about his, you know, that he's a very humble servant of God, and he sincerely is, well, he's very sincere in his beliefs, you know?
Yeah.
And I've just always kind of resonated with that image, you know, that so when I hear St. Patrick now, I tend not to think of the classic old man with the hat. And I think of a young man.
Yes.
Sitting on the side of the mountain in very simple slave's clothes, in a state of, you know, obviously starvation, perhaps. And he hears the voice of God, according to his own writings. And I think that is just such a fascinating, you know, glimpse into this man's life and the kind of man he was.
For sure. And, you know, it's refreshing to hear that because, you know, the symbol of Patrick is so distinct in our minds. And it is the older man with the big beard.
Yeah.
Really, in our minds.
It is.
Even though we learned about him as a young lad, you know, tending sheep. We don't I don't often think of him in that way. So it's nice that you're allowing that pause for thought to see him in a different light.
Yeah. And to think about it, I suppose, in terms of a real person, you know, and not this, like some of the legends are just like they're brilliant, you know, but this whole thing about, you know, casting the snakes out. I mean, people have drawn comparisons that perhaps that's a metaphor for pagans because we didn't have snakes in Ireland. Even back then, we didn't have them. But Patrick never mentions anything about casting snakes out himself. A lot of all these things...
Are pagans?
Nothing, really. Like, you know, nothing the way that we would recognise it now. But that all came later. Centuries later, people writing hagiographies about Patrick and attributing all these things to him that maybe other preachers or bishops did, but certainly there's no evidence that Patrick ever did it himself.
So I suppose the evolution of Patrick in terms of what we know today, but you're really kind of about stripping it back to deal with what we do know, what we do have as evidence of who this person was.
Yeah, and I suppose what we can infer from what we know as well. So, you know, in a lot of the legends, there's a lot of stories about Patrick smiting down his, you know, the heathen Irish, and he's very confrontational. He's almost a sorcerer. Like, you know, he comes across as a bad guy, you know, in a lot of these stories.
Yeah.
But I think if we can think about, you know, 5th century Ireland, very tribal. The dominant religion was this, you know, polytheist paganism, pre-Christian. And the only people that really would have had leeway to travel around the country like that would have been kings, you know, poets, judges, important people. Mm. Everyone else didn't travel. So the fact that Patrick was allowed, and he lived to an old age, was allowed to travel around for that long in a strange country, you know, preaching this religion that was kind of frowned upon by, you know, let's face it, by the people in Ireland at the time. But the fact that he was allowed to do that, I think we can infer maybe that he obviously wasn't going around murdering people, because he swiftly would have found himself on the end of a knife, I suppose, if he was doing that, you know. But he didn't. He kept going. And I always kind of, you know, and I nearly run off sometimes with my thoughts, but I love to imagine at the time what kind of conversations must have been going on when he'd pull up somewhere and, you know, he'd be invited in to break bread with the people there. What kind of conversations were going on around the table? What they were talking about? How they were talking to him, you know? And I'm sure, like, we all have debates around our kitchen tables now about different things, and, you know, be it politics or whatever it is. I imagine it must have been a very interesting time to be around and to be listening in on those conversations, you know? And that's what I find fascinating about Patrick.
Does he speak about that moment when there is that communication with God?
Mm. Yeah, so he repeatedly hears from God throughout his life. Mm. Now, I remember actually when I was doing my classes, I had to just ask straight out, like, was he lying? You know, is he lying in this? You know,
okay.
Was he really communing with God? Like, you know.
Was he schizophrenic? I don't mean to be facetious, but
honestly,
was he hearing voices?
I like to think about these things, you know, and what my lecturer said at the time was that this man was up on the side of a mountain, starving.
On his own,
like with only the sheep for company. And God knows what kind of mushrooms or whatever would have been growing up there, you know, that maybe he was just starving and like...
off his bin.
Yeah, he sincerely held the belief that this was the voice of God, you know, and that when he was up on the mountain, God told him that, you know, his ship was going to arrive to take him home. So off he goes, and he walked 200 miles to get to this ship and brought him back to Britain. And then, you know, we get this heroic story of, you know, being lost in the wilderness and God helping him find his way, much like Moses or even Jesus. There's a lot of similarities in that. Luke Skywalker, you know, there's a lot of there's a lot of similarities, you know, with that kind of hero's journey
that we see in
Patrick. But eventually, anyway, he hears God again, the voice of Ireland calling him back to save the Irish. And I'm doing inverted commas there, from their pagan ways, and off he goes. But whatever.
From their pagan in tune with nature ways.
Yes, exactly.
So calling him back. Mm. I find one of the interesting things about Patrick, and maybe it was just from my childhood eyes or perspective, as a kid I used to think, well, he wasn't actually Irish.
No, that always fascinated me as well. I'm so glad you said that.
Okay.
Because honest to God, like you know, we discussed Bridget the last time I was here. I mean, what a woman, like, and a real Irish woman. And I said it, I think, at the time that... if there's going to be a patron saint that we all celebrate, that's our culture and whatever, surely it would be her, because Patrick was English, you know, or British.
Check their passport.
Yeah.
But yeah, I remember always thinking, right, okay, so he is Ireland, but he wasn't born here.
I know. It's funny, isn't it? But maybe that's a nice story as well. I don't know, that, you know, people can come from abroad and be as Irish as any of the rest of us. Like, you know, maybe there's that element to it. But and just then on the whole, the saint thing as well, you know, it's funny. He was never actually formally canonized. Nor was he ever, we believe, ordained as a bishop.
So is he really a saint?
He was kind of a chancer, Sheila. Because there were other missionaries being sent out, you know, to shepherd the Irish Christians back in the, you know, early medieval period and, you know, the 5th century when Patrick was there. But Patrick wasn't formally sent from Rome. You know, we had other fellas like Palladius, who I think... poor El Palladius now, but Patrick got a lot of the credit for his work.
Right.
But there's others that were sent and dispatched specifically from Rome to come and be our, you know, guide the flock in Ireland. But Patrick kind of on his own volition. And that's why I say, like, he must have really, truly and genuinely believed and felt that faith if he was willing to kind of almost forego. And that's in his confessio as well. And I'm sorry, I'm skipping from point to point, but he, in the confessio, it almost reads like he's trying to validate his work, you know, a little bit.
Okay.
That maybe he was getting a little bit of criticism from the big guys, you know.
Right.
Who is this lad? Like, you know, but and so he's trying to lay out, you know, his own faith and his own journey. And it's very compelling, you know, whatever you might think of him. He comes across as very humble and sincere in that. And, you know, that's the impression I get.
It's so interesting. And I still have quite a lot of questions about him. Like, one of the questions that's coming to mind is, how does he go from being this humble young guy tending sheep, doing something on a very basic level, to becoming a bit of a star, a bit of a superstar? Then he becomes, you know, he gets a bit of notoriety and a bit of fame. Like, when does the stamp of patron saint arrive? I know not till a lot later.
Yeah.
But in his lifetime, does he reach a level of recognition?
Well, we don't know. See, this is okay. This is the thing. We have two pieces of writing in his own hands, which I will say that's kind of amazing, you know, that we have these things written by him, but not a whole lot else contemporary to Patrick that we would have to draw from about him. Only things that we can kind of guess and infer and, you know, whatever. But
I don't mean to cut across you, and I don't mean to be cynical, but if he says in his writings that he didn't feel he was very well educated and he didn't have a lot of confidence, yet he can write so beautifully.
Yeah.
Is that...
And funnily enough, he writes in Latin as well. So obviously he was, you know, in some way educated. And, you know, he says, he talks about it, you know, there were religious figures in his family before him, but he had lost his faith. So when he came to Ireland, he had no faith, or he very little anyway. He distanced himself from it and found God again then when he was a slave.
But we do have enough evidence to confidently say, yes, these are the writings of the original Patrick.
It's accepted. Yeah,
okay.
It is accepted.
Okay, great. So there's no debate over that. Brilliant. Mm. Right. So, when does he become the Patrick that we know today? When does that happen?
Yeah, so I mean, it just, in the centuries since his death, we kind of made him this this just supernatural phenomenon, you know. In the, you know, hundreds of years after Patrick himself died, we get writings from different little monks, scribes, people of that nature, you know, who wanted to, I suppose, write down the stories. And so we get these hagiographies that they start attributing all these things to Patrick that we've no idea where these stories came from, you know. So the shamrock, I suppose, being the kind of the biggest example.
Mm.
Now, that it's a great story, you know, that he picks up the shamrock and it's this little three-leafed plant, this common plant that would have been very familiar to the Irish. And it was his way of explaining how three beings could make up one God. But I suppose, like, some people take issue with that because really the whole idea of three beings making up one person wouldn't have been a strange one to the Irish anyway. You know, the pre-Christian beliefs are littered with triple
Trinity.
Deities.
Yeah,
and,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And the number three, like, sure, it's so important to them. So I don't know, like, it kind of feels maybe that would have been something that maybe, I don't know, another priest or a bishop did years later that just got attributed to him, you know, because it just seems that maybe wouldn't have been necessary at the time to have to illustrate it like that. But
yes.
But regardless, it's attributed to him now. You know, we'll all keep drowning the shamrocks.
Totally. He was some man for a parade as well, wasn't he?
Oh, unbelievable. He loved a parade.
He loved a good float.
He loved a float. He did.
Good old marching band thrown in. So, you know, Patrick now has become, nowadays, a little bit of he's a figure that divides people. There's still a lot of love for him and it's great that we have a day and it's a day to celebrate and, you know, a lot of people love to plan a breakaway around Paddy's. But there are some people that feel a little bit, not so sure.
Yeah, and I think that's really heightened in the last, I don't know, say 10, 20 years. There is a lot of, I can just see resentment building, I suppose. And I can understand it. I really can, because he is associated with the end of our pagan past and the beginning of our Christian, you know, reality. But as I said, you know, sometimes, and I think it's probably because I'm a historian and I like to be objective as much as I can about things, just going by his writings alone, I don't know, is it fair like to have that sort of criticism of him?
Yeah.
Certainly criticize organized religion till the, you know, night comes in. I would be leading the battle on that one. But Patrick himself, you know, he's more of just a historical figure, I suppose, that has had a lot of things attributed to him after his death that, I don't know, maybe he never asked for that. That's how I like to think about it. Anyway,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah. And thank you for shining a light on that as well.
Yeah.
So in recent years, and it's something I only heard about myself a few years ago, I'd never heard the talk of it before. Sheila the Gig, yes, absolutely, lots. And I feel, obviously, because it's a connection with my name, I'm fascinated by it. But this idea, and I suppose it is it just an idea? I'd love to know more. This idea that Patrick had a wife and her name was Sheila. And I have heard reports that while Patrick's Day is the 17th of March, the day after, the 18th of March, really is her day, Sheila's day.
Sheila's day. You must love that, Sheila.
I'm going to start my own parade.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
So, I'd love to talk about her.
Yeah, another just such a fascinating set of stories, you know, of Sheila. And and you touched on there, you know, the idea that she's St. Patrick's wife. And, you know, I was saying to you, you know, earlier on before we got started, that unfortunately, like so many other things in Irish mythology, there's a lot of mystery. She's kind of shrouded in vagueness and, you know, you kind of have to fill in the gaps and research a lot, I suppose, to kind of form an opinion on it. But I'm sorry to say, I don't think St. Patrick had a wife.
Okay.
There's no evidence. He would have been allowed, you know, it wouldn't have been a controversial back then for him to have a wife. There's certainly not one mentioned. But again, it's just entered into folklore that Sheila, this mysterious, feminine, earthy figure, was his wife. And that was something that has died out, you know, really since the 1800s here in Ireland. That's died out.
How did they make that leap then? How did if what we know is it's probably unlikely that's actually true at all, how did they then start to, I suppose, make that association?
We don't know.
Don't know. Interesting. Right.
Know.
Okay.
Yeah, I know. It's a bummer because I'd love to know.
Yeah.
I'd love to know where that came from. I'm so curious. No, but what we do know is that, you know, so as I was saying, kind of pre-1800s, this was a kind of a big thing, an important sort, almost a feast day, I suppose, the May 18th of March after St. Patrick's Day. And also something that was very important to the Irish diaspora who left here and went to places like Newfoundland and Australia. So Sheila is someone that, with a lot of the wave of Irish people that left, you know, coming up to the famine and around that time, she seemed to have gone with them. And Newfoundland in particular is a very, very interesting place. Now, there's a, I'm going to forget the name of the town, I believe it's Talavanaishk in Newfoundland. Yeah. It's the most Irish place outside of Ireland, allegedly. Yeah. And a lot of our, you know, traditional music, folk beliefs, things like that, ended up going over to Newfoundland and surviving in a very pure form. Mm-hmm. You know, where they got lost here, I suppose, because there, a lot of these ideas were kind of frowned on by the church. So got lost, kind of ended up surviving in places like Newfoundland. So there's a story. And again, kind of a little bit vague. Is it the same Sheila? We don't know. But there's a story of an Irish princess named Sheila Na Gcuire, who was taking a ship to France, I believe, but was waylaid by pirates and ended up being taken to Newfoundland. But she married the pirate that had captured her on board the ship. And when they got there, she had a baby, and it was supposed to be the first European child born in Newfoundland. But she kind of entered into this this folk tradition over there, that basically what some of the legends that go along with it are things like Sheila's Brush, it's called. Mm. So that would be the last snowstorm after St. Patrick's Day. And there's a superstition that you don't go out sealing, or you don't go out on your ships until Sheila's Brush has passed. And that that Sheila's Brush is called Sheila na Gaeg, mm-hmm. which kind of brings us nicely into what we're familiar with over here,
yes,
is Sheila na Gaeg.
Yeah.
So I don't know, for anybody who's probably not familiar with what a Sheila na Gaeg is, and I don't know how descriptive I can get.
Oh, no, okay, hey, get as descriptive as you're comfortable and that you will allow yourself to.
Okay.
Because I think the more we speak about what Sheila na Gaeg is all about and what the symbol stands mm-hmm. for, the better it is for everyone. Because I know, in certainly in my childhood and what we grew up in, the kind of the crude learnings through school mm-hmm. was that it was always seen as very vulgar mm-hmm. and deeply uncomfortable to talk about. But actually, while it is a very, the images of Sheila na Gaeg are very primal. They're very mm-hmm. they're very raw. They're very real. But what they stand for is very powerful.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. And I so agree with you that I think, you know, any kind of uncomfortableness about, you know, particularly the female body, that has just been, you know, just frowned on throughout history, really. And it's a horrible shame. And I really would love to see that kind of whole idea come to an end, because we're all enlightened now. You know,
yeah, and she is a deeply misunderstood symbol.
Yeah. So anyway, basically what Sheila na Gaeg is, and I'll describe it for people who maybe not are not familiar. It's a carving, and there's hundreds of them here in Ireland. They're little carvings of what appear to be old women, mm-hmm. Naked, with their legs apart, and they're displaying an enlarged vulva or vagina.
Yeah.
And it's shocking. It's a shocking image when you see it the first time. You're kind of blown away. Oh my God, like, it's so vivid.
Is this what I'm seeing?
It is shocking, you know. And even more shocking, I think, is when people realise that a lot of them are found on churches.
Yeah.
Which just seems to, it's just one of those, almost a paradox, you know, that this shocking, you know, that women have been really, you know, not allowed to discuss our bodies, not allowed to hold any position of power or importance within that institution. But then you have these mad medieval stone figures, you know, that almost guard the doors and the windows. And it's incredible.
So what's that all about? Because, again, it's the fact that it was a kind of a, oh, no, no, we don't talk about that.
Yeah.
We don't talk about them at all. Do you know, we'll just brush over that and move on. But actually, it's time that we do talk about it.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
And celebrate her. Celebrate the symbol.
100%, Sheila. 100%. So there's a lot of speculation on what they actually were. We don't know for sure, unfortunately. But they are, we think, the carvings, at least, medieval in origin. Whether or not they were built at the time of the churches and the castles that they're on, we don't know. Or maybe they were brought from elsewhere and mounted up on the walls. We're not sure where they would have come from originally. We would imagine that it could be for protection. It could be for look. It could be maybe, in another way of looking at it, maybe a sort of a warning, you know, about the sins of lust or whatever. I don't really read it like that, though. I have to say, I don't read it like that. And there's speculation maybe as well that it's almost like an older woman nearly showing you how to give birth. I don't know. It's And that the what things that would have been encouraged maybe in medieval times in preparation for birth would be to try and loosen the vagina, or, you know, to try and in preparation, basically getting your body prepared. And that this is kind of a window into life and death, and this whole like amazing idea of rebirth and, you know, the wisdom of the crone and all that kind of thing being passed on.
So is it a combination of the three symbols, I suppose, of womanhood, the maiden, the mother and the crone all in one?
Possibly.
Like for me, I've always, well, now that I'm learning more about it, it feels like it is a symbol of creation, of fertility, mm-hmm. of birth, of renewal.
Yeah.
While that juxtaposition of the image of the older woman, it is in your brain, it's doing something. It's kind of like, what? But it's probably saying, to me, it seems like it's saying so much.
Yeah.
But I love the mystery of her also.
I know. And I think as well, I mean, we can draw comparisons between the imagery in this in Sheila na Gaig and also on Cailleach. So
yes.
You know, I'm sure you're familiar with you know, on Cailleach and this hag goddess that is really almost a forgotten goddess as well, similar to Sheila, that people have almost forgotten that we have this ancient entity on Cailleach here in Ireland and in a lot of the Celtic communities. And basically, this is a goddess of winter, of death and of rebirth. She takes the form of an old woman and, you know, it's sort of the wisdom of age and the wisdom that we accumulate and that is at its peak before death, basically, is what, you know, what we'd be kind of talking about. And it's no coincidence that Sheila, as in this goddess that is supposedly Patrick's wife and all the rest, and on Cailleach, that, you know, her day is the 18th of March. Mm. We have the spring equinox coming up next Monday on the 20th.
Mm.
So all of these things are linked, I think, anyway.
Yeah.
And even, you know, and I mentioned to you before, the whole idea that, you know, we have Patrick who represents Christianity and, you know, that part of our history, but that he's married in a folkloric sense to this goddess, Sheila.
Who embodies paganism.
Who embodies, yeah, our pre-Christian path. Mm. And I maybe that's not an incorrect comparison to draw, but in my mind, I feel that that's so
opposites
powerful.
Attract.
It's so powerful, you know, and it's this marriage of our past and present. And,
yeah.
And the same, you know, with the whole idea of the equinox and like our ancient, our most ancient ancestors built these fantastic big burial mounds that are aligned with the equinox and with many events on these celestial calendars. But there are a couple that are specifically aligned with the spring equinox.
Yeah.
And what I think is so interesting, and I don't know if anybody else has noticed this, this is just my personal observation. The fact that the Sheilas appear above the doors of the churches, right? And that her body is opened up. You almost feel as though you're walking into a womb when you're passing underneath.
Yeah.
And what I noticed is, these ancient Neolithic burial mounds are almost the shape of a pregnant belly. And then the narrow passageway and the door and the light that enters is like a birth canal or a vagina.
Yes.
And there are many examples that you can look at and say, my God, that's so striking. And the fact that, you know, we have up at Loch Crew, Slieve na Cailleach, all this, you know, it's all linked to on Cailleach, to the winter, to the equinox, to all this really ancient spirituality. And then we have Sheila, very similar, you know, very feminine, this open openness to birth and creativity, and that her day just happens to be March 18th. I mean, it's all so connected.
It
is all just a big circle. I just love it. I think that's what makes studying, you know, Irish mythology, Irish history, archaeology. It's all so connected. And you can't help but be kind of, as objective as you're trying to be, it's very spiritual, you know, and it's very connected and just something that is so worth looking into. And I'd recommend anyone that there's fabulous maps and everything that you can get that have all of the Sheila na Gaigs in Ireland on them, and go on a Sheila hunt. Go on a Sheila hunt and see them for yourself. They're unbelievable. They really are, you know.
Do we have a number in and around how many they
around
know?
100. That's,
around it's, 100. It's quite a number.
It's massive.
You know, so it wasn't just in a community, in an area.
This was
countrywide.
And they appear, you know, in funny places. There's one up at the Hill of Tara. And I'll tell you a personal story now, but you know yourself, I struggled with fertility for many years before we got our little Ferdia. But and this has become almost a revived tradition now, that women will go up, and you'll often see women going up and hugging the Sheila na gig on the stone at the church, in the churchyard at the Hill of Tara. I did it myself.
Oh, gorgeous.
Yeah, a few
Love
times.
That.
And now we have her 30. So I don't know if there's anything to it, but it's amazing. And I think it's a gathering of female wisdom and intuition that goes so nicely hand in hand with having Patrick's Day beforehand, you know, the kind of more masculine, more whatever, you know, you want to say about that, the patriarchal sort of Patrick. But then we have this older, earthy, feminine wisdom that comes the following day, and I'd love to see it being revived. I think we should all raise a glass.
Absolutely.
To Sheila on the
I'll be hey, an excuse. And it does make you think about you know, energy, and when you look at masculine, you know, you can't have just feminine energy on its own. There is a combination of the masculine and the feminine, the yin and the yang, whatever you want to call it, that balance. And that, I suppose, is the March 17th and 18th is an example of that balance. You know,
absolutely.
You have this figure, male, and then the following day is the female representation. Can we talk about na gig? What is that about? What does that, the Sheila na gig part, what does that actually mean?
Do you know what? There's kind of a little bit of debate over that, and I'm going to butcher the Irish words now, but I believe it's Sheila na gig is a kind of what it's been maybe speculated it could be. And I think that translates to Sheila of the breasts or something like that.
Oh, yeah. Kirche are your breasts. Sheila na gig. Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
It does make sense.
It does, because if you look at the little carvings, I mean, obviously the front and center is the vagina, but on a lot of them,
you
breasts
do see breasts
quite,
also. And the Sheila that, you know, that went out to Newfoundland, say, and the Sheila na gig, are they completely separate, or is there a connection? Like, where do they intertwine?
Yeah, so in their name, start, you know, so the name Sheila is, it's kind of an unusual name, to be honest. It doesn't seem to be, it appeared, you know, in the medieval period, I believe. And I think it was, you know, the anglicization is Julia.
Yeah,
Cecilia.
Yeah, and then there's various spellings. I obviously have,
oh my God,
you know, your standard Irish spelling, but there's also the Sheilas with the A-G-H, the S-H, the Sheila. You know, there's as far as I'm aware, there's definitely, I'd say there's four or five anyway, different spellings, maybe even more.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
But yeah, whether or not they're all related, I mean, it's just more research is going to have to be done, I think. And do you know what? I think it's great because it is going to be done.
Yeah.
There's just so much interest now in the whole concept of Sheila. And we want to, I would love to know, like, what is the relation with the little stone carvings, with this mythical goddess, or with the folklore of Sheila going off to Newfoundland. And it, like, there are other examples as well, you know, just to show how powerful and how relevant she was. Even in Australia, so we have a huge Irish diaspora out there as well, and I'm sure we've all watched Home and Away and all the rest, and you'll hear the people calling women Sheila.
Yeah.
That comes directly from Ireland and from, you know, Sheila, who went off with the diaspora that headed off there. And it's so sad because I sometimes feel that with all the people and the knowledge that we lost, that had to leave Ireland, it's so sad that so much of our traditions and our knowledge and our past ended up going out with them. It's such a shame, because we kind of lost the knowledge about Sheila. Obviously, she's still embodied and continued on foreign shores, but we don't really know much about her here. And I often wonder, if they didn't have to leave, what kind of landscape would we be looking at here? You know, I often wonder that. It's sort of, it's a little bit sad, really, to think about it.
But that's why people like you, historians, people who are folklorists, who are into it, who study, who research, are so valuable to the likes of me, because you can then educate us and remind us and encourage us to delve a bit deeper and look at it. And I think it's no mistake in us sitting here today having this conversation, because, you know, we spoke not so long ago about Bridget. This year on Irish TV, there was a documentary about, who, you know, who she was. And it was brilliant. I loved it.
Yeah.
We had our conversation. It was the first year that we actually had a national holiday. Like, that didn't happen last year. Didn't happen the year before. There is a shift now. There is a change. It's been a long time coming. It didn't happen overnight.
Yeah.
And a lot of people, like your good self, have been campaigning for this change. But again, now we're discussing Sheila na gigs. A few years ago, that might not have been not necessarily accepted, but certainly not normalised.
No. Oh my God, it's a team effort, Sheila. You know, and it's just great to see that that there is an interest, and there really is. Like, I've been doing Tales from the Woods since 2020, before the pandemic started. It was actually a New Year's resolution to start it. I said, I'm going to do this now once and for all.
And it's so taken off.
And it took off. But even in the few years that I've been doing that, like, the amount of interest,
yeah,
it's amazing. And you can have these great conversations and like rows. I love it.
Or do people kind of question what you're saying?
Oh, of course, and I want them to. You know, because that's the only way you learn.
Sure.
The only way you learn. I always say, like, you know, I'm none of us are perfect. I'll get things wrong occasionally, or you know, things will need to be updated. And I'm so open to that because it's the only way we're going to move forward. You know, it's the only way we're going to do it. So it's great, and I hope it continues. You know, I really do.
I hope you enjoyed this episode, and Shelley will be back again in a few months' time to tell us all about the Celtic Festival of Beltane. Thanks for listening. Too ready to be real.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee, and you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit eBay.com for terms.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.